Savannah has seen a tsunami of local government news this week, from police investigations to the naming of finalists for the city manager position. What better time for a check-in with City Talk columnist Bill Doors here on the Commute Podcast, presented by National Office Systems. Welcome to the Commute this Thursday, June the 15th of 2021. I'm Adam Van Brimmer, opinion editor and columnist at the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. If you've picked up a newspaper or visited our website this week, you know it's been a busy one on the local news front. Today, I'm joined by one of Savannah's keenest observers of local happenings, City Talk's Bill Dowers. Right after, I tell you about National Office Systems, of course. The Commute's presenting sponsor's name says it all. National Office Systems is the source for office design and outfitting services in Savannah. We at the Savannah Morning News are proud to call ourselves clients, as are hundreds of other businesses in the Savannah area. National Office Systems has been serving this community for more than 30 years and works with the best suppliers in the business, from Savannah's own Dirt Modular Interiors, which manufactures configurable office environments, to office furniture superpower Herman Miller. Learn more by visiting natoffsys.com. That's NATOFFSYS.com. With that, cue the interview with City Talk's Bill Doors. Pleased to be joined on the Commute today by City Talk's Bill Doors, who I like to talk to occasionally, and no offense to the other guests, but he is my favorite guest for a couple of reasons. One, I enjoy talking to him. Two, we can take this video and we talk about so many different topics. We can cut it up and we put the video on a variety of stories, including his own and other city-related, city government-related matter stories, and we get a lot of mileage out of Bill, so we always appreciate him taking a few minutes to talk to us. And Bill, it's been an incredibly busy week on the city front, and we're going to kind of talk a little bit about the police and some of those matters later, more of, you know, 50,000 foot view, not so much the details of what's gone on. But the other interesting thing this week that we've been anticipating and waiting on forever is city manager search. It looks like the city has found some pretty good candidates this time. They'll be in to interview next Friday and Saturday. The candidates include Heath Lloyd from right here in Savannah. He's a assistant city manager, but also a candidate from Cincinnati, Ohio, who is an assistant city manager and has been a chief administrator at a smaller suburban city before, and then a assistant city manager from Washington, D.C., who prior to going to work for the Washington city government was working in a federal government and was tackling homelessness as part of an interagency council put together during President Barack Obama's administration. So certainly we have some candidates this time that have pretty impressive resumes, pretty impressive credentials. I talked to the mayor yesterday, on Tuesday rather, and he basically said, I feel pretty confident we're going to get a city manager out of this bunch. But as you kind of look over, and we don't have a lot of details on these folks yet, but as you kind of look at this situation, is it premature for us to be optimistic that this, after 2 years, may finally be drawing to a close and we're going to get a new city manager?
I think it is perhaps too optimistic to just assume that's going to happen, just given the, you know, the divisiveness among city council. I don't know how you could feel confident that the mayor's right and that something good will happen here. It feels like to me that something good has to happen, though. I mean, we're now, you know, approaching the second half of the second year of the term of this city council with, you know, a new mayor and lots of new members. And they, you know, as I said in a recent column, I feel like they need some wins. And one of the wins they need is to get a solid city manager in place so that they can pursue other parts of their shared agenda. They all ran on similar platforms and want to do similar things, they say. But they really need, you know, a permanent city manager. Michael Brown, Pat Monahan, I think have done great jobs as interims over the last couple of years, but they need somebody who can come in with a full commitment to work with them for the next 2 years and then beyond, presumably. So they do look like strong candidates, and I'm hopeful, but I can't say I'm confident. What catches your eye from among the three?
Van Johnson talked about wanting a gamer, right? We got into that whole thing last fall. He wanted somebody, and he talked about this going all the way back to when he was running for mayor, when, you know, when he was in our offices, we were doing endorsement meetings and he was asked to search priority. And that was his first and only priority at that point was, you know, we can't do anything else, which kind of gets to what you were saying, until we get this person in place, because this is the person that really guides the city. I don't know that a lot of people understand how vital or how important that role is in our form of government. The city manager is the chief executive of the city. The mayor and the city council set the vision. They set the agenda. It's the chief executive that executes on that. It's just like a CEO in a corporation. You've got a board of directors that you know, kind of talk through and review your work and kind of give you direction. But ultimately, it's the chief executive that has to execute on it. I think it's the same thing in Savannah. So Mayor Johnson, or at that time, Alderman Johnson, was like, we need somebody in here who's a gamer, who has experience, who has thick skin, who has the ability to really drive a large organization, you know, 600 some odd people strong in the city. Actually, it might even be bigger than that in terms of when you kind of pull in police and fire and all the other departments, but the direct city government's about 600 people, I think. And if you don't have that person there, then the organization tends to founder. So from what he was saying, and then what we saw last fall, where we had three candidates who all were either deputies or their experience as a chief executive was limited to a startup city in a very brief period of time, which was, Odie Donald, who ended up in Augusta as their equivalent of a city manager. Those three, none of them fit that mold. And I think that's really kind of what led to the division and the infighting amongst council, was nobody was really confident. Nobody inspired enough confidence among all of them to bring them together. This group seems to have at least, I'm going to focus on the out-of-towners because I think people know Heath Lloyd, and Heath Lloyd's background is a little different than the other two, is these two folks from Cincinnati and Washington. They just have a broader depth of experience. And I think that in itself is going to appeal to this city council. I also, from what I understand, the way the search went was the search firm basically did somewhat of a, I don't want to say an algorithm, but they did an assessment that was more scientifically based. You know, they ranked all of these candidates on a variety of different criteria to come up with a number to try to find a fit for what Savannah wanted. And so you at least have that. And from talking to some folks that are involved in the process, they've said that they feel that the finalists this time, they feel a lot more confident with the finalists this time than they did the last time, where it was, you know, it was a little more informal. It was more anecdotal, you know, we like this person or this person did this, you know, that now they have some metrics to go with it. That said, they still got to come in an interview. And I know that they've talked to all of these candidates already over the phone or Zoom or however they've been doing it. But when they come in for the in-person interviews, that's going to be the real test. And as we saw last time, nobody really passed that real test. Will any of these three, especially the two coming from out of town, will they pass that test next time? And also, Van Johnson has said he's willing to hire somebody on a 5-4 vote now. The last time he said he wanted 9-0, but he would have settled for 7-2. Obviously, we've got two factions on the council now who don't seem to really agree on much of anything, at least anything of high profile. So if it comes to four of them want this candidate and five of them want this candidate, will that 5-4 carry the day? And will they be able to move forward with that person? I think that's going to be the real test is, one, can one of these candidates inspire more than five people to support them? And if not, how does the 5-4 split, how does that kind of carry through with the hiring process, and how does the eventual hire then try to win over the other four?
Yeah. And, you know, given they do look really strong on paper, and given the different process that would, one hopes, find three stronger candidates that would be more broadly acceptable. You know, I could imagine a situation where multiple members of council find multiple candidates someone they could vote for. And, you know, and that's where, you know, you just hope at some point, just a spirit of sort of compromise and discussion that council could kind of come to a consensus. You know, even if they walk into the room and it looks like it's 5-4, you know, maybe they can hash it out. And maybe the person who was going to get four votes would end up getting more, you know, if they're able to sort of talk through the strengths, the weaknesses, the fears, the concerns, the hopes for the various candidates. You know, the two out-of-towners, Cheryl Long and I'm forgetting Melder's first name off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's me too quick too. Melder from DC, what are you gonna call him?
Jay Melder. Cheryl Long and Jay Melder. You know, they both have experience dealing with a wide variety of different types of departments, different types of initiatives, everything from sustainability to homelessness to inspections to, you know, they have a broad-based knowledge about how cities work. You know, and as we all know, it certainly would be a big adjustment coming from a big city to a smaller city, an insular city, a kind of difficult, a tough town, as Rob Hernandez said, like Savannah. But they clearly have just kind of the kind of broad knowledge that one would expect to find in a city manager. And, you know, with all of the big decisions the city has to make over the next few years about the canal district, about the development of the Civic Center property, hopefully working with the Housing Authority on Yamacraw redevelopment, in addition to, you know, the issues that we know they're going to have to confront, crime, blight, poverty, you know, the things we know that are going to be there, in addition to balancing the budget. And, you know, I do think we have, you know, we certainly have three candidates, Melder and Long and Heath Lloyd here in Savannah, who would seem to have the requisite experience to be able to do all those things. Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know what they'll, you know, how will they, I mean, will there be an automatic advantage for the local candidate, or will there be an automatic advantage for other, you know, other reasons? It's really hard to see what happens from here. But I'm hopeful that we will see something like a 7-2 or a 9-0 vote. And that, you know, members of city council can all just sort of sit down and maybe make this the first test of their ability to kind of reestablish some collegiality so that we don't go into the next 2.5 years of this administration with 5-4 votes. Yeah. I just don't see how that will serve the city at all.
Yeah, I think after they do the interviews, maybe that they should just come in and start with a blind ballot. You know, before they talk about it, before anybody kind of stakes out their position and then kind of the personalities come into it, maybe they do a blind ballot. And if they get 7 or 8, then that maybe can guide their discussion. It would be interesting to see, okay, this is the blind ballot. After everybody staked out their position, this is where it moved. And hopefully, like you said, they'll favor, you know, what's best for the community and not let the pettiness and some of the other things that have leaked in the past leak into this process. But like you said, it's going to be interesting to see, and we'll kind of cross our fingers and hope for the best. That's really,
yeah, that's absolutely. Really absolutely.
We can do with this, but you touched on it earlier, and that's the whole idea that this, we need to get this done so that we can focus on everything else. The timing is right, because a lot of the task forces that were put together by the mayor and by the council are starting to, you know, their deliverables are coming in and they're starting to give their guidance, whether it's on affordable housing or whether it's on poverty. We've already seen the one that was working on police reforms, and that has already kind of brought their stuff to the forefront. You mentioned it, that now is the time. We're almost at the end of 2 years, but what are some of those things that you think that they can tackle quickest once they do get this city manager position filled?
Well, I mean, that's things like affordable housing and poverty. I mean, those are long-term kind of, you know, Those are just long-term battles, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, by the end of the year, I think it is reasonable to expect significant movement, for example, on the so far, what we've seen so far, excellent recommendations of the Housing Savannah Task Force. Mm-hmm. I think they've come up with some really credible recommendations, almost maybe too many recommendations, because, you know, they it's not as if all of them could be implemented right away. Mm-hmm. And the city manager and city council are going to have to sit down and, you know, think really hard and perhaps be educated about issues like inclusionary zoning, which is a recommendation. It's not a, you know, something that the Housing Savannah Task Force says has to happen, but, you know, it's essentially a way of mandating a certain amount of affordable units will be built when other development happens. That'll end up being quite controversial, I think, something like that inclusionary zoning. Just streamlining some of the processes and funneling more money into affordable housing creation, though, I think that can be done. There is talk of some changes, some zoning reform. And Savannah zoning is better suited to increased density than it used to be. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly some places that some neighborhoods where some zoning changes could help the creation of affordable housing. And I think we can expect movement on those issues right away. I think we should expect movement on the police reforms that are recommended. A lot of this is, you know, with the groundwork already done by these task forces, I don't think it should be that difficult to begin to actually implement policy. You know, so I'm actually moderately hopeful on our ability to, like, this fall kind of hit the ground running anew. Because also, you know, the time is now also because, you know, we're sort of, the pandemic is abating. City council should be back in chambers at some point. They'll be dealing more directly with the public. We'll have more opportunities for public meetings rather than Zoom meetings. And we'll just have more chances for sort of engagement this fall. And I think people are going to be eager to engage because a lot of us spent a good portion of the past 15 months not engaging with people in public ways. So I feel like we've got to get moving on a lot of this stuff. Now, I've written specifically about, you know, these major pieces of property that are government controlled and that are perfect for kind of denser development, affordable housing development, mixed development. Yeah. Yamacraw, the fairgrounds, the Civic Center site.
Canal District.
The whole Canal District, all of that, right? Now, I'd rather see us take our time on all of those and do them really well rather than kind of rush them. But it would be heartening to see pieces of those developments, first steps toward getting those where we want them to be. It would be nice to see some of that happen this fall. And, you know, again, I would say that these three city manager candidates, Heath Lloyd would have some familiarity with the specifics of those sites mm-hmm. and their potential. Mm-hmm. But I suspect the other two would be very quick studies. You know, it's not like this is especially complicated when you have these beautiful tracts of land so close to the historic district.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I think it's going to start with the ordinances and zoning in terms of development, because I'm already seeing it. I'm sure you are too. The economy's starting to surge here a little bit. I think tourism has started to come back maybe even a little bit too early. It was a little bit freakish back at the first part of the year to see kind of the crowds downtown, but it has continued to build, and we're pretty close to where we were before the pandemic waned. And then we've also seen some of these other projects that are coming online elsewhere, whether it's, you know, the signing of the Amazon deal or some of the other things that are brewing that would be job creators in Savannah. But you know, if Savannah does indeed come out of this pandemic charging like a bull, it would be good to have a city council that's ready and eager to take action, to take advantage of it, because these opportunities don't come along very often.
And I do, you know, personally, you know, I write about the economy a lot, and I expect for the foreseeable future, at least through the rest of the year, to see continued strength in the local economy. Our payroll employment numbers are already kind of back to, they're not quite where they should be, but they're back to the levels of 2 years ago. Now, with population growth and everything, they should be higher than that now. They should be like 1.5% higher, but we're already back to that point with the payroll job numbers and the labor force participation rate. The data from the workforce survey done by the Georgia Department of Labor, I mean, it indicates that we have more people who say they are employed than ever. Now I know there are there's a lack of employees in the service industry in particular, but the data suggests that we have as many people working, they're just doing other things. And I think some of them will gravitate back toward the service industry, especially if wages continue to rise, as seems pretty clear that they are, from all the you know, it's anecdotal, but from the anecdotal evidence that I have, you know, restaurants are raising their kitchen wages, and I mean, they're boosting what they need to boost to get the employees they need to be open as much as they want to be open. Some of them still can't be open as much as they want to be, though.
Right.
But I think we'll see a lot of that labor market kind of settle and return, because you know, what we also have to look forward to in the fall, in terms of the local economy, is the full return of SCAD. Right. We had probably several thousand SCAD students who took classes last academic year, but weren't here. Mm-hmm. They weren't here spending money. They weren't here renting apartments. They, you know, and they weren't here working. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be here in the fall. That surge in people will inevitably help the economy.
Pardon the interruption here, but please allow me to work in a small word about a big sale. Right now, you can get 6 months access to SavannahNow.com, the online publication of the Savannah Morning News, for just $6. I'm no mathematician, but that works out to $1 a month. I didn't even have to use my smartphone calculator on that one. Our website is the best place to keep up with community news, sports, and opinion makers. Go to SavannahNow.com/subscribe now to get full access. Now back to the discussion with City Talk's Bill Dorse. Since we're talking about economy and we can, we talked about affordable housing, I want to talk about housing. I don't know if you saw some of the real estate stuff that Nancy Guan's been doing in recent weeks, but because of the pandemic or because of whatever, everybody's either refinanced their house or not moving. The inventory is very, very low. Out where I live on the island, it's just incredible what property is going for now. And you know, part of you looks at it and a lot of us remember 2008. And maybe it makes you a little bit nervous, but I think there's a lot of other things that are different this time. So maybe it shouldn't make us nervous. But when you look at housing, the appreciation in terms of the prices, especially for single family houses and the inventory, what's it going to take? Is it going to take builders? Is it going to take a drop in the price of building supplies? How much of that worries you, especially with West Savannah or West Chatham, Effingham, Bryan, just ready? They're ready to get back developing out there again, and it's just not happening yet.
It's so complicated.
Right.
I'm not worried necessarily that any of that's going to end up being like a significant long-term drag on the local economy. Mm-hmm. I think it's inevitable that supply chain issues will sort of sort themselves out. Some construction costs will moderate. Some prices will fall. But I don't see any signs of the kind of out of control lending or, you know, the Wild West mortgages of 13, 14 years ago. Right. I tend to think that the supply and demand will eventually kind of even out, but you know, it's worth just noting that, you know, throughout the pandemic, we saw a huge leap in the household savings rate in America. We saw a dramatic increase, obviously, in remote work. And it seems like a lot of companies and a lot of jobs can now are we're going to continue to see remote work. And we're going to continue to see more more households that can choose where they want to live without having to worry about necessarily it being super close to a job if they don't have to go to that job 5 days a week. And, you know, combine the added household wealth with the low interest rates, people can afford a lot of house. Yeah. And I don't see any reason to think they can't continue to afford those mortgages that they're going to have either. I mean, the ones who might end up in trouble will be people who decide that they want to flip or they want to move within a couple of years. They might struggle if we see kind of a retreat in the prices, but I don't see any long-term change in the prices. And, you know, the dynamics of it all, have pretty much guaranteed that any houses that are constructed are going to be kind of upper income and above. And the rents for the houses that are out there, the ones that are for lease, those are going to keep being pushed upward too, until we've got more, more capacity, until we got more inventory. I think the trends put pressure on the fact we need more affordable housing, and we need policies that will encourage easier to build forms of affordable housing that are market driven. I'm not talking about government subsidies, just, you know, a decent quadruplex, a decent duplex, a decent, you know, that there are incentives to build forms of housing that actually people really need. It's going to be really interesting to see how some of these things play out for the next year. I think it's a given, though, that the housing prices can't continue to go up like they have for the past year.
Yeah, you would not think. So last thing I wanted to get to, we touched on it at the top, was it's been a rough couple of weeks for Savannah Police. And of course, whenever the temperatures get really warm, we tend to see a little bit of a spike in gun violence. And of course we've had a couple of shootings in town, most notably the mass shooting that happened last Friday, where eight people were shot. Two of them have died. And it's become clear from some of the press conferences that have been held that the police are having a hard time getting people to come forward. And we all wondered with what happened last year with George Floyd and tremendous pushback against police and the calls for police reform, what would that do to trust in the police? And then, of course, on top of all of this, comes out Friday that we have five police officers that were fired in relation to the in-custody death of William Harvey. Now, two of them were fired because they didn't follow policy in terms of the interview of Harvey. Harvey was taken into custody to be questioned on an aggravated assault. While he was in custody, he was left alone in an interview room, and it would appear that he hung himself with his shoelaces. So two officers were fired over that. Three more officers were fired because following that incident, one of them got the idea that it would be wise or funny or just horrific to send out a meme via text that showed a hanging. So the three people that were involved with that were fired as well. So you have you have the background of people not trusting the police nationally. You have the rash of gun violence here in Savannah that usually comes around this time of year, unfortunately. And you have police being unable to really get information, at least to our knowledge, and at least it's been portrayed that way. They're having a hard time getting information on these shootings. And then you have the backdrop of what has happened here with the Harvey case. What all to you does that say about police trust, and how do we kind of get this thing turned around a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, just on a political level, as divisive as the city government has been, as divisive as council has been, there's generally been very strong support for Minter and the police. And clearly, I think the public deserves answers to a lot of questions right now. And, you know, while it's good to see, you know, a strong response in terms of, you know, firing people who, you know, haven't followed procedures, we need to know more about the incident involving Mr. Harvey. And I think we need to see clearer sort of initiatives to get to the point where the community trusts the police more and aren't afraid to talk and talk about what they know and say what they know about crimes. You know, I think this is going to be an interesting moment for Minter. Chief Minter has been here, you know, for several years now, and he's largely been kind of, he hasn't gotten the scrutiny that the previous police chiefs have gotten. Mm-hmm. I think there's been a little bit of a set, but the public's like, okay, let's just give him a break. Let's let him do his thing. We've got other things we want to worry about. Crime is not, you know, spiking as it has periodically over the past 25 years that I've lived here. But now I feel like we really, you know, and this goes back also to, you know, the earlier conversation. You know, we've got a task force that's come out with recommendations. We've got a city council that's supportive. We've got an economy that's on the mend, and city budget bottom line should start looking up, right? What are we going to do? And are we just going to continue to kind of tread water and, you know, deal with these spikes in crime and say a bunch of stuff that, you know, until everything quiets down again? Or are we going to see the police actually launch some new initiatives or find ways to do what they're doing now better and more effectively? And are we going to see continued political support from Minter from the elected leaders? I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Police support police angst, I think, tends to kind of flare up around here, right? 2015, it played a key role in the city elections back then when Eddie DeLoach beat Edna Jackson. And of course you had 2014, you had Chief Lovett, who, you know, ends up in jail. Chief Lumpkin comes in, kind of gets things going again. And like you said, at that point, I think the focus, people are only focused on the police when things are really, really bad. That might not be fair to the police, but that's kind of the truth. And then, you know, Chief Minter comes in. There's a little bit of a flare up when I think something like 70 different officers signed it, complained against him and challenged his leadership in the way he went about things, but that kind of died off. And now we're getting to the point where I think the pandemic, of course, crime wasn't particularly high during the pandemic. We did have some issues with some domestic violence because people were kind of cooped up at home, and we saw a rise there. But you're right, in terms of crime and gun violence, this may be the first real challenge he's seen in terms of that. And I'm really interested to see how he handles it, because I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. Over the last couple of weeks, I haven't been real impressed with the way the police department has handled transparency and dealing with the public and really making themselves accountable to the public and explaining things that have happened and why they've happened and what they are doing to kind of fix it. Because there are people that are wondering if there is a cultural problem here. And I think that way we are where we are right now, that's probably a fair question. Can we answer it right now? Probably not. But I think it's on everybody's radar right now. And it's going to be incumbent on Chief Minter to really to address that and address it in a very pointed fashion.
Yeah, to just say what the cultural problem is. Mm-hmm. And here is what I'm going to do about it. You know, I mean, and you're not going to address that just by letting people go who are all related to, you know, these two incidents, the meme and the death in custody. Yeah, we need more answers on all of that. I mean, I really can't emphasize that enough, because what we also know, and from the dates you just alluded to, we also know that a spike in crime and public interest in crime and public distrust of the city leadership's ability to handle crime can make a whole city administration unravel.
Again, we'll cross our fingers.
That's not a very good policy to like go through life with, you know, just crossing our fingers.
It's not, but that's what's the best we got right now. But Bill, I've taken up entirely too much of your time. Thanks so much for joining me today and sharing your insights. And we'll circle back soon.
I always enjoy talking to you, Adam. I wish I had better answers for everything.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Commute and to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Please support them as they support this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of The Commute and want to hear more, download archived episodes on your podcast app by searching The Commute with that Savannah Opinion. The Commute returns next Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend and happy Juneteenth.